Roberta Grimes back with us on Coast to Coast with one of her latest works called The Fun of Growing Forever. You're going to love what we're going to talk about next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got a great couple hours here for you with Roberta Grimes, a business attorney who had two extraordinary experiences and then spent decades studying 200 years plus of communications from people that we used to think had passed on. And using this material insights from scientific research, he's been able to assemble a detailed picture of what happens at the end after death. A number of books out there. She's been on before as we talked about The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Dying, her latest, of course, The Fun of Growing Forever. You love the fun series, Roberta. Welcome back.
Hi, George. I'm so glad to be with you.
I'm looking forward to this. It's nothing like a great Sunday night chatting with you. You are one heck of a researcher, by the way.
Thank you. Well, it's a compulsion. I love this evidence because it fits together just like a puzzle, and the way it paints reality is so wonderful. It's better than anybody ever imagined. It's very exciting to talk about because it's all good news.
Is your background in law been able to help you when you do this kind of work and research?
Oh, yes. The thing about law school is it teaches you how to think. I never knew how to think until I went to law school. But it helps you understand how to put evidence together, how to evaluate it, how to see how it, you know, fits. Yes, it helped a lot.
Let's talk about, of course, after-death experiences and just what might be on the other side. In your other book, The Fun of Dying, you talk about what happens next, and this is a more complicated sequel, basically, to that, because you talk about how we can transform the world until we transform ourselves.
Yes. The thing is that when you study something real, and basically afterlife researchers started with figuring out what happens at and after death, but then we realized this is a whole new reality, which science will not look at because it decided 100 years ago to investigate only matter. And even though most scientists now fully understand that nothing solid exists, there is nothing that we think of really as matter. It's all energy. But still, that's where they are. They're still only looking at matter. And most of reality, frankly, is beyond our ability to perceive it as matter. So because what we've found is real, we've had a tremendous amount of fun going beyond what happens at and after death, which is old hat. We figured it out. But figuring out the rest has been just so much fun.
That's the fun and the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, but since it's all good, it's like a disease. You just can't stop doing it. It's a compulsion to figure it out. And we do know the truth now. Jesus told us the truth will set us free, and it turns out it sets us free from religion, among other things.
Are you baffled by what you're learning?
Oh, I was. Yes. Until we got good quantum physics for dummies books early in the 21st century, you know, probably around 2003 or 2004, I started to discover you could get books about quantum physics that had no math. Until then, I was really, really perplexed. But now it all makes perfect sense.
I'm still seeking questions to a number of, I'm still seeking answers to a number of questions, Roberta. Like the Big Bang, I can't get a physicist, darn, I've tried, to explain it or make sense to me.
It's the start of a thought. That's all it is. I mean,
tell me more.
Well, look, here's the thing. There is no such thing as time. We experience time and we think it's essential, but it's not. Beyond this physical universe, which is a tiny percentage of what exists, according to physicists, they believe it's less than 5% of what exists. Beyond this, there is no time. So really, there was never a beginning, there was never an ending. But what we perceive from here, because there was a start to the physical universe, it's just no start or finish to us. What we perceive is really the start of a thought. The only thing that exists is what we perceive as consciousness. But it's not really nothing like what would, of course, scientists, they can't even figure out what consciousness is.
No.
They're going at it, you know, from the wrong end. But if you were beginning to think a thought, it would sort of start, right, and explode in your mind. That's what the Big Bang was.
What about the why? Where does the why factor come in, specifically for us? I mean, have we figured? I mean, those people who are spiritual and very religious will say, this is a learning curve. We're here to, you know, generate the soul and perfect the soul so it doesn't come back anymore. But it still doesn't explain really the why.
Well, here's the why. In reality, which is probably 90%, 95% of what exists, of what we even could perceive from here, there's probably more. I don't think there's an end to reality. But in that reality, there is no stress. And it turns out that spiritual growth requires stress. And in a deeper sense, we've forgotten what and who we are. We're all part of the same mind that continuously manifests the universe. We are part of, what, if you want to call it God, we're part of God. But we forgot that, and we forget that for reasons we can talk about later. But the point is that we've got to remember that, and the way to remember it is to go to the gym. We've got to strengthen our spiritual muscles, and that's what the universe exists for. It's our gym. So we strip down to come here. You know, if you go to the gym, you put on your T-shirt and shorts, you strip down so you can get on those exercise machines. Well, here, we strip down to just a tiny part of our mind. We think it's about 10%, but most of it we leave back home where we're going to go back very soon. We come here and we get on those machines. They might be loss of a job, loss of a marriage, loss of a child. You know, any negative thing that you think happens to you is something you planned into your exercise regime as a way to grow. Because when those things happen, we do learn spiritually in ways we can't learn in most of reality. And that's why the universe exists. That's why we come back. But we've always existed. Just think about this logically. In an area where there is no time, you can't have ever begun and end. If you exist now, you always exist. It's that simple.
It is simple, I guess.
It's interesting because the more we look at it, the simpler it becomes. The universe is really not important. What's important is the true reality in which we are eternal.
Let's talk about death. Why do we have to even die?
Why do we have to be born?
Well, that's another good question. why are we born?
We're born so that we will have the opportunity to
die.
yes. Well, basically, yes. But we need to come here. We choose, actually. We're not made to come here. We choose to come here because we are hungry for spiritual growth. And when we come here, we try out those machines. We forgot why we got on the machine. So it's a little harder for us to grow, and that has been a challenge, but that's going to be pretty soon a challenge of the past, because pretty soon we're going to know a lot more, and everyone will know. And there are reasons for that, too, that we can talk about. We have a lot to talk about. But we die because we want to go home. You know, there you are, you're tired, you've been at the gym for a couple of hours, and wherever, I've never been to the gym, but I could imagine you'd get tired and want to go home. And that's why we die. We go back to reality.
What do you think of people now saying that we live in a basically a false universe, a created universe, almost holographic?
Oh, that's probably right. Look, there is no such thing as solid matter. Physicists know this. They used to think that matter was made because we had little particles and they sort of circumscribed the atom. But if the White House, it's size and location were the nucleus of an atom, but its closest orbiting electron would be in Denver, and there would be nothing in between. And that electron they used to think was solid, but it's not. It's a vortex of energy. The nucleus, the electron, everything, if you could put a tiny camera inside an atom, there'd be nothing for it to photograph because it's all energy.
Roberta.
It's hard for people to get their minds around that, but that's even scientists know that.
Where does reincarnation fit in?
Well, because we forgot why we went to the gym, we've basically screwed up our spiritual lesson. We didn't forgive. We didn't learn to love. In order to really understand this, George, we've got to realize how reality is constructed. The easiest way to think of it is as the channels on your TV. if we're right now you're tuned to that body on this level of reality, which we think may be the lowest in terms of vibration, consciousness exists in a range of vibrations from the lowest, which is abject fear, to the highest, which is perfect love. We don't make the rules. This is just what we've discovered. And right now you're tuned to that body and this level of reality. But when you die, you'll just change channels. You might go to channel from channel 3 to channel 5, and there you pick up a whole new solid reality, solid seeming.
And in your series, The Fun of Whatever It May Be, tell me about that, all by itself, The Fun. Where did you pick that up from?
I was given it. Everybody listening has spirit guides.
Yes.
And everybody listening planned their life. And I didn't know what my life plan was till I was pretty old. But one day in 2009, I thought it was time for me to give my life to God. I've had a good life. It was his turn. So that was back when I thought God had a gender. So I did that. And then within a few months, I was writing a book about the afterlife. I didn't even know I was going to write a book. A year later, when it was ready to be published, I thought I was going to call it Dying for Idiots, because I figured I'd start a new series. You know, we've got the Dummies books, we'll do the Idiots books.
Yeah.
And the publisher said, figure out another title. So one day I woke up and there were three titles in my mind given to me by my guides, I'm sure. The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. And this was in the summer of 2010. So the fun really was not my idea, but it turned out to be perfect, because you can have the fun of just about anything. I'm going to be doing fun books for years, and it makes it happy. I mean, people, in the beginning, people would see the title and be jarred by it, but the dead tell us over and over that dying is fun, the process is fun and joyous, and it feels good, it almost feels orgasmic, and that being there is the most fun you can imagine. It's all good news.
Well, I remember when you were on, what we're talking about, the Fun of Dying book, and I'm thinking to myself, oh boy.
Right. Right. This is a lunatic lady, but in fact, it's the dead who tell us it's fun, and it's time to get rid of the stigma, because there's nothing more fun than going home, and that's home. This is not home.
No, it's not home. What's amazing, though, is the things that humans do to each other when they should be building a better planet.
Oh,
that I don't get.
Well, I think I can explain it a little bit. Remember I said that consciousness exists in a range of vibrations from lowest, which is fear, but also a lot of other things which are related to fear, like hatred, anger, even grief, all of those negative, ishy feelings, that's the lowest consciousness vibration. And too many people on Earth, we're born, we strip down, remember, to just a limited part of our mind. One of the things we have in our minds is free will. We have absolute free will. Scientists will tell you we don't, but we do. And that's so we can make the right choice. Bad thing happens to you, someone murders someone you love. The only possible choice is to forgive and to love. That's it. That's why you came here, to learn to do that. And when you make the wrong choice, and there's hatred, anger, animosity, you get the world we have now. Too many people have made the wrong choices. Because remember, we're all part of one mind. We can't escape the fact that other people are doing it wrong. They're making the wrong choices. And so you made the wrong choice. You go back there. You go, darn it, I was expecting I could do that, but now I can't do it, so I got to go back and try it again. And we tend to make our lessons harder each time we come back. Because we're from there, it all looks so easy, right? We're going
to come. It's supposed to be.
Face it. Yeah. But because we forgot why we're here and why these things are happening and the fact that it's not real, we hold grudges, we hold anger, we do all these negative things. And that weighs us down spiritually, and it certainly weighs down the planet.
I had heard that one of your spirit guides could very well be Thomas Jefferson. Is this true?
Yes, that's what he claims to have been. He's not interested in his Jefferson life at all now, which surprises me, because if you'd been someone like that, you'd sort of be going around polishing your nails against your chest, right? But he's not. He's way, way beyond it now. His mission is to try to save the universe, frankly.
Did he come right out and tell you, I'm Thomas Jefferson, your spirit guide?
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't want me to know.
Mine's Ben Franklin, by the way.
Is it really?
No, I'm kidding.
Well, that's the thing. thing. I mean, I sort of didn't believe it in the beginning, but it was still fun. It was sort of cocktail party talk for a while for me, and then he got serious and started telling me what he wanted me to do.
How were you approached?
2 years ago, a little more than 2 years ago, I had been driven, feeling driven to have a reading. So I went to Suzanne Wilson, you know her.
I know her.
Extraordinary
yeah.
medium.
She's very good.
And I went to her. I had a nice reading with my family. And then she said, oh, and your spirit guides are here. Would you like to meet them? And I said, oh, yes. So I have 11, or I had 11 at the time. They tend to come and go for all of us. And then my primary guide stepped forward and said, you may call me Thomas. And I already knew who it was. I said, oh, my goodness, Thomas Jefferson? And he said, yes. And from then on, I was a groupie, which is the worst. I almost could see him wincing.
You were a groupie to your spirit guide, huh?
Oh, my goodness, because I was a big fan of Thomas Jefferson's. I'd written a book about his marriage, which he had guided, it turned out. I discovered that later. But it took me a while to get over it. He was pretty ticked. I mean, I met with him a couple of times when he just said, look, if we're going to keep asking questions about that life, I am just... He said it wasn't even his most important life. He said it wasn't mine, but I had more important lives. So this was a real turning around, but I'm used to it now. He doesn't look like Thomas Jefferson, Suzanne says. He looks like Clive Owen at this point, because he had one more lifetime. I already knew that, actually. He had one more lifetime after his Jefferson lifetime. And so I don't even think of him that way now. I mean, I think of him as this sort of my best friend.
Did he come back as anybody we would know?
No. He said that his life as Jefferson so unbalanced him. He had too much power. He didn't always use it well. And so he had immediately, for his own sake, he wanted to come back. It was because it was supposed to have been his last lifetime. I'm going to ace this one, right? And he felt he didn't. So he came back as a poor farmer in Wales. And that was his last lifetime.
Most of the things, I would say all the things that you have written that I've read are pretty enlightening. You don't dabble in the dark side at all. How come?
I don't like the dark side.
But it's real. It's there.
I know. Other people love it and let them enjoy everybody who likes to look at the bad stuff. I mean, I didn't even want to admit things like the possibility of possession by evil entities, all that stuff. I didn't want to know about it.
Why? Because it scares you?
Well, it's just not fun. If it's not
fun,
oh, no,
it's not fun.
Do it. No.
Especially if you're possessed.
No, right. But eventually, of course, you have to look at those things because it's all part of the whole. You take the dark with the good. But I certainly don't emphasize it. And I only want to know about it if I can find out also how to fix it.
But you can't deny, for example, the existence of evil or the devil. It's here.
That there is no devil. We know that now. And it's impossible. On the level of the physics of consciousness, it's impossible for there to be a powerful, evil entity
what?
In opposition to God.
Why?
Because the lower your vibration is, the weaker it is. So if you are fear, anger, rage, harm-based, which is what the devil is, like the epitome of that.
That is the devil.
Yes. You have no power. All the power is with the higher vibrations. So, for example, some people have heard of shadow men that
mm-hmm.
they tend to have a cape and a top hat and they lurk in your closet.
Yep.
They're real. They are the most evil entities of which we're aware, and they have no power at all. They basically lurk in closets to try to scare children so that they can feed on that fear, because that's how pathetic they are.
If there's no devil, though, why is there evil? Or how did evil come?
It's all the evil that we know of has been primarily created by consciousness. People or entities on other planets have made the wrong choices. They've chosen fear, anger, hatred, greed, all the negative emotions over love. And if you do that, you lower your vibration and to the point where you don't have any ability even to perceive love. The lowest level of the afterlife is not hell, it's not fiery, it's what Jesus called the outer darkness, where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. That's a very good description of it. And everybody there is a demon. They're all human beings who now perceive themselves to be demons.
We'll talk more with Roberta Grimes, author of The Fun of Growing Forever, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Roberta Grimes with us, of course, and we're talking about her work, The Fun of Growing Forever. Fascinating what's maybe on the other side. Roberta, Now, as we were talking about evil, and I'm saying there's got to be a devil, and you say there is no devil. So let's get back to that.
Okay. Look, if you think about any kind of energy, it can be very weak or it can be very powerful. At the highest end, consciousness is infinitely powerful. Consciousness is the only thing that exists. What we experience is consciousness. Extremely powerful. It makes the universe continuously manifest. It didn't just start and somebody walked away. It's consciously being maintained every instant of time. And at the negative end, however, are the losers, the people, the entities. That usually we think every entity, whether it's an extraterrestrial entity or a human entity, who has basically made the worst choices, ends up a demon. And they're still aspects of consciousness, but they're demons. They're not powerful, but they're scary. A shadow man cannot harm you, has no ability to harm you, but it'll scare the dickens out of you if you see one. And that's true of all kinds of demons, but they don't have any power over us.
Let's hope not.
All you have to do is invoke the light, and they'll go away. They don't have any power against the light.
Now, you were talking about spirit guides and how everybody has some. How do you contact them?
Well, there are a variety of ways. What's in vogue right now is learning how to contact them yourself. Suzanne Wilson is at the forefront of this. She trains people to do this, to contact your own dead relatives and to contact your own spirit guides, who are just another kind of dead relative, really. And I was sure I had no consciousness, no ability to be psychic. And I believed that my whole life. But after I got to know Thomas in the last few years, although I do a reading with her every 2 months just to keep in touch, more and more I'm able to understand what he's feeling and what he wants me to do. He's always all I have to do is think of him, and I immediately know he's right there. And anybody can, if I can do it, and I'm totally, believe me, clueless in the area of being psychic, anybody can do it. You just need to practice.
In your work, The Fun of Growing Forever, give us the overall theme.
Because we're here to learn to grow spiritually, because we have forgotten why we're here, there are a variety, though, of entities, very advanced beings, who have come to us with lessons, right, on how to do it, Buddha and a number of other Eastern teachers and Jesus on the Western end. And what they taught us is really basic stuff. Because I was such a devout Christian until I realized that nothing about Christianity is right, it's a first century Jewish sect, but Jesus is right. We can confirm that now. He's real. So I've used the teachings of Jesus, just taken them out of the religion, what he said in the Gospels, and tried them myself. And I can tell you, they're the easiest way to ace this lifetime. If you do what Jesus tells us to do, you could make, I don't care how old you are, you can make this your last lifetime. Give yourself a year, and you could ace it and go home and never have to come back. It's that simple, and it's easy to do. I even figured out why it's easy to do, and that's what The Fun of Growing Forever is about. As you pointed out, the subtitle is, We Can't Transform the World Until We Transform Ourselves.
So true. So you do not believe, then, in a hell?
There is no hell. There is no condemnation. There's no judgment by God. And Jesus told us that, but of course Christians have ignored it. There's no judgment by anybody but ourselves. And those demons in the outer darkness have put themselves there, either because they couldn't forgive themselves or because that's where they thought they belonged. Nobody condemns us there but ourselves.
Roberta, tell us the death procedure. Somebody physically dies. Tell us what happens. What goes on?
Well, people have complained about the term, of course, fun of dying, because they had cancer. It was not fun getting there.
Not fun getting there, no.
But within about 24 hours of the death, it starts to get fun. You feel better, number one. If people who had terminal Alzheimer's disease can often sit up in bed and start talking to people and be normal for a while because their consciousness is separating from their brain. And then when you actually start to die, it feels funny, they say, if you're awake at the time, but it's a very simple process. You gather in your chest, and very often then through the chest, or more likely through the top of the head, you exit the body. And you look like a mist to the people around the bed, but you suddenly feel fantastic. You feel, you don't feel any less. You feel so much more. You just imagine you were imprisoned in a boat anchor, and now suddenly you're free. That's how it feels. And you don't really understand what to do next or what's going on. But fortunately, for usually a few hours or up to a day or two, you've been seeing people you used to think were dead. And they look young and healthy and happy and great. And they're saying, you know, you're coming home. We came to get you. We're all excited. We're going to party. And you feel really good. And this is a warning to everybody. You're going to feel good when you're out of your body. Do not pay attention to the people around the bed who are all unhappy because, oh my goodness, he's dying, she's dying. Don't pay attention to them, because if you do, you can lower your vibration. That's how we make ghosts.
You're talking about the living people around the bed.
That's right. Okay. Don't pay attention to anybody around the bed who's sad that you're leaving. Pay attention to the living people who have come to bring you home, people that you used to think were dead. So then all that happens is you raise your vibration. It happens naturally. People who have been there say that there's often a fog. They're raising their vibration. They look back at the bed. It's kind of getting shimmery looking, and they're going through the fog with their loved ones, and then it lifts, and we are in paradise. It's beautiful. It looks like the earth, but it's perfected. The North American Summerland, which is what we call these levels, is surrounded by Rocky Mountains with beautiful snow on them, and then green foothills. And there was this one man who died early in the 20th century who had been almost blind. And when his people around him, during the seance, asked, "Well, Dad, can you see now?" He said, "Let me tell you how well I can see. It looks like 50 miles away, there are these beautiful trees on foothills, bright green. I can count the leaves on the trees 50 miles away." That's how good mind sight is, which is what we have with our new bodies. There are beautiful colors you've never seen before because they're beyond the visible light spectrum. There are birds and butterflies and all the no mosquitoes, though, which is really a good thing. And the water is living water. It gives off music. It gives off energy. It's just beyond belief. It's really literally beyond belief how wonderful it is. And that's home. That's where we live normally.
Now, is this in the minds of the dead, this environment? Do they paint a picture? Does everybody see something differently?
No. There's a common reality, which is mind created by very high-level entities, and that's where we start. We think it's level three there. We roughly parcel it out into seven levels, although the dead, it's interesting, the dead are starting to use our terms, but they didn't invent the idea of seven levels. It came from us. But the place where we arrive is think of R&R. My husband was in Vietnam. They go on R&R to sort of get rest and relaxation. Well, that's how it kind of is right after we die. There's a great deal of catering to us, trying to help us through the trauma that we've just been through, which was a life on Earth, and playtime. I mean, people, if you always wanted a Bentley, you can have someone mind create a Bentley for you, and it doesn't give off exhaust because it's powered by your own mind. Anything you want. People fly around in weird little flying saucers. They travel by mind. You can go anywhere you want and be there instantly. But a lot of people like the idea of having a vehicle. And it's just you always wanted to learn to play the piano. Mozart will teach you to play the piano. There are places you can go which are much more specific. For example, there are historic villages, let's say you wanted to always live in the Wild West, or maybe you're remembering a lifetime in the Wild West. There's Wild Westville, and you can, I don't think they call it that. You can go there and you can experience everything about it, the clothing, the horses, everything. Or, Future Town, you wanted to be in some sort of a futuristic place. You can go there too. All you have to do is think of it, and you're there with other people who enjoy the same things. You want to go hear Elvis perform. All you do is put out the intention. I want it. And this is, by the way, the real Elvis. For some reason, he's just kept it up. He said he's going to stay there and at this lowest level of the Summerland until everybody who was his fan has come home, and then he'll go on and do other things. But all you do is put out the intention of going to an Elvis concert, and you'll suddenly get the notion, oh, there's an old Elvis, you know, original Elvis concert going on in Monrovia, in the summerland of Monrovia. So you think, okay, that's where I want to be, in your front row center, and the performance is like nothing you can imagine because our hearing is so much better there. The music turns into clouds of color above the arena. It's just every little detail that you can imagine is there for us. They say you can't take it with you. If you're in a reasonable level of the Summerland, maybe even three, high upper level at three or level four, you can just think, you know, I wish I had that book. What was that book? I want to have that book. You turn around, that book from when you were here, you turn around and it's in your house. Everything you might want, you can have. As I say, it's hard to believe. I found it hard to believe at first, but that's what the truth is.
Who determines who gets reincarnated and who doesn't?
You do.
All right.
You
and remember, do we come back where we want to come back, or is that the predetermined?
No, we decide. Now, the one problem there is, of course, that there's a limit on the number of bodies. I know it seems to people that the reality after death must be crowded, but it's not. It's much less crowded than here. And there's a limit on the number of bodies that are available, so you've sort of got to put in for bodies. But typically, here's the thing. Remember I said that reality after death exists in a range of vibrations? The higher you go, the more fun you have. Everybody hungers. Every craving you have right now in your life is nothing compared to the hunger you're soon going to feel to grow and to go to a higher level.
I guess when you're at that higher level, you don't want to be reincarnated, do you?
No, and no. You, as soon as you can avoid it, you stop. and you can grow. After you get to a certain level of spiritual growth, you can continue to progress just by helping other people there and here. That's who spirit guides are. They're past, usually close to or actually past the need to come back. And according to Thomas, it's about higher, upper fifth level, but it's up to you, really, when you decide you've had enough. As I say, he came back one more time just because he felt he had screwed himself up with his Jefferson lifetime. But once you are there for a little while, the fun of it rubs off. It starts to be, okay, we've done this. I want to go up to level four or level six. I want to do more. And you can't, because you can't go above your own level of spiritual development. So that's when you get together with your friends, and we all have eternal friends. If you think you don't have any friends in this lifetime, you've got a ton of them when you go home. We get together with our friends. We figure out what we need. What did we not do well the last time? We've been through a review of that life. We go back and look at it again. And so we plan a life. Okay, I didn't handle it very well when my wife left me. So this time I'm going to plan a life in which not only does she leave me, but she first murders the children. I mean, that's where we think there. We think life on Earth is very brief, and it's unpleasant, but we'll get through it. And I know I can do this time. And we plan a life where these people are going to be in our lives in different capacities. We tend to reincarnate with the same group of people repeatedly. Thomas says he and I have reincarnated together 17 times before he became my guide. I don't have any memory, of course, except I actually remember one lifetime. But once we sort of get it all laid out, we go to the authorities, the elders, and we say, this is what we want to do. They approve our lifetime, or they suggest we maybe tone it down. That's what that often happens. And then
can they turn you down?
Yes, they can say, look, well, you cannot have a house fire which was set by your husband, and it also kills him and the children, and you become quadriplegic in that. That's too much. You will not be able to survive and grow in that lifetime. So tone it down, paraplegic. That's the kind of thing they do. They try to make us less ambitious. But then we have to choose a life, and all of us choose a life. Now, I'm told that the people in my own present lifetime, the family I have, is not my own group, my own soul group, but I chose that lifetime because I needed to come in at that time and that place, roughly, and that's why I was born where I was. More typically, though, your parents and your siblings and friends, the person you marry, these people who are going to be important are all part of your own soul group, and you've done this before together in different capacities. Maybe you were your husband's, wife. He was your wife, and you were his husband, or maybe you were siblings in another lifetime.
I got to tell you, Roberta, this is a fascinating work that you've done here. And
isn't it fun?
I haven't heard a downside from this. Is there one?
No. The only downside is if you don't take your earth lesson seriously. Because, if you go through your life being grumpy, being bitter, being angry, you are only hurting yourself, because you're going home in about 2 minutes in terms of reality. And when you get there, you're just going to go, shoot, now I got to do the whole thing over again. Many people, because I hear from them every day, many people want to make this their last lifetime. And that's what The Fun of Growing Forever is about. It's a handbook for doing that. And because it's based in Western teachings, you don't have to learn to do yoga. You don't have to learn to meditate. You don't need a guru. You don't have to do anything that seems creepy to a Western person. It's the teachings of Jesus. What could be more basic than that? It's just that they're not religious. So you can, it doesn't matter what your religion is or if you have none, you can just listen to basic truths of the physics of the greater reality, which is what they are. And they work so fast. It's amazing. And there are reasons why they work fast, which have to do with the fact that you're here to learn. Your mind is set up to learn these truths. All you have to do is follow the lesson.
Are you convinced that whatever is on the afterlife will continue? Does it change? What happens in the future with that?
It's eternal because it exists now. So it always existed and always will exist. It's very hard for us to get our minds around the fact that there is no time, but there is no time. Einstein said time is only exists so we can keep everything from happening at once. And that's necessary here, but it's not necessary there. And so, yeah, it'll always be that way, but we change, we grow. And the more we grow, the better it gets. The person I know who lives at the highest level of reality and was recently on Earth, he came back deliberately to learn how to communicate with us because he'd last lived in the 1600s, is Mikey Morgan. He took a 20-year life here and died in 2007 and now communicates through his mother. And I didn't believe this for a minute, George. I tested him and asked him so many questions. He knows way more than I do because he knows everything I know. And then he would add a tweak here or there, and I'd say, oh, my goodness, I started learning from him.
Did you try to catch him?
Catch him? No. He went home, and he now is back on the sixth level. He's actually increased by coming here. That was perceived as such a sacrifice to come here and spend 20 years because he was already in the mid-sixth level. But now he's at the upper sixth level. Mainly he lives as light. And sometimes he comes to my sessions with my guides, and he shows up as light.
What about I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the last time I met with him, he was shimmering in and out of light. First, he looked like a kid with a T-shirt, and she said, I think he's on a skateboard. No, that's a snowboard, because he became a snowboarding fanatic when he was here. His book is Flying High in Spirit, a young snowboarder's account of his ride through heaven. He snowboards there still.
What about the Akashic Records?
I don't really know anything about them, because I suspect... a lot of these truths are known. People come to try to teach us about truths. But because we tend to build religions around them, we distort them. And so I've looked only at primary materials when I could. I mean, the same thing, the teachings of Jesus are the best way to grow, and yet they're packaged in a religion which ignores them. That's what typically happens. There is something like that, but I'm not convinced that our perception of it from here is real, so I haven't studied it. But there are great libraries full of scrolls, and in those libraries you can go and learn about all your past lives. You've had so many that people tend to study only the ones where they made the most impact in some way. Not earth impact, but impact on their...
All right, Roberta, we're going to come back. Final hour to go here. I've got a few more questions, then we're going to open up the phone lines on Coast to Coast AM.